Good morning and welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show, where we celebrate top performers producing better results in less time. This week's show is brought to you by Hall's Mentholyptus. As you can hear, my voice is a little more hoarse than usual, but I think we'll get through it just fine. I'm joined by my co-host, Lee Cantor. How you doing, Lee?
I am doing great. Your voice sounds normal to me.
So. Yeah, that's what I was afraid of. Actually, we're brought to you by the Desai Group, and particularly their innovation execution practice, and we'd encourage you to join the conversation and get to know us a little bit and work with us to produce better results in less time through innovation. A couple of ways you can do this. Check us out at www.desai.com. That's DESAI.com. Or check out Stone's Renegade blog at innovationroi.com. So what'd you do this week, Lee?
Thanksgiving. It's my favorite holiday. Yeah. I like thanking and giving. Those are two of my favorite things. So we spent some time with the family, appreciated each other.
And you had a good seafood dinner?
And then we had the Popeye's Cajun turkey.
Popeye's.
Our family tradition.
Is it really a tradition?
It is now.
Is this the first year you've done the Popeye's?
No, we've done it for... It started out, we did it 5 years ago, where we had a regular turkey and a Popeye's turkey. And then at the end of the time, we noticed there was no Popeye's turkey left, and there was lots of regular turkey left.
Yeah, well, that's a good controlled experiment.
Right, so from that point forward, we've eliminated the classic turkey and went straight with Popeye's.
Well, we did our family tradition as well. Most Thanksgivings, we head up to where my wife's mother grew up in a little town called Hundred, West Virginia.
Hundred,
West
number?
Virginia. Yeah, it's named after an old general that apparently lived there until after he was well over 100 years old. It's a town of, maybe 200 or 300 people, all of whom are related to my wife and me and my kids. And so we go up there and we scare the deer and ride the four-wheelers. And I don't think we had any Popeye's turkey, but we had a couple turkeys and some ham.
So you get live, fresh turkeys there?
We have a turkey hunt there in the spring.
Nice.
Yeah, so we had a lot of fun.
And you had all your kids there?
We had them all there, and my 11-year-old, very proud of her. Now, this is something that won't surprise anybody that is from my culture and from my neck of the woods. I grew up in a very sophisticated metropolitan area called Cantonment, Florida.
Yes.
In Northwest Florida. But it's a big deal in my culture and where I'm from when your child takes their first deer. And my 11-year-old, Kelly, took her first deer this year, so I'm a proud dad.
Did your oldest daughter drive it back in her truck?
Oh, she wanted to take her truck up there, but she did drive. She helped a lot, and I got to lay in the back and watch movies on the way up.
All right.
So that was a lot of fun.
Full circle.
Yeah. Well, we have a terrific show for you today. I'm going to introduce you in just a moment to a gentleman who's a former IBM executive and now is the grand poobah for a business. Lee, I don't know that we've ever had a business on the show that does as much to help as many people increase their ratio of results to time invested as this business. The business is called Roam, R-O-A-M. And I'm going to let this gentleman explain it a little bit, but I think I mentioned on our last show that I had a chance to go out and do a site visit. Among other things, one of the first pleasures that you can enjoy the moment you walk in the door is a fine double espresso.
And that's right. If they mention your name, you get free something.
Yeah, between now and December the 15th, if you stroll in there and check these guys out, have a cup of coffee on us here at the High Velocity Radio Show. Just let them know that you heard Stone mention it, and they'll set you up. That's any one coffee drink of your choice.
One.
Right. But without further ado, I'd like to introduce you to and welcome to the show, Brian Kramer.
Thank you, Stone.
Well, thanks so much for joining us. So tell us a little bit about this business of yours, Roam Atlanta, and what pulled you out of what I'm sure was a very rewarding career with IBM to venture into this arena.
Well, it's been quite a journey. You know, Roam is a business cafe and meeting center. I also like to say it's a place where entrepreneurs can come to succeed. We noticed a while back that people did not have good places to meet. You know, there's certainly lots of places you can sit down for a cup of coffee or a sandwich, but if you wanted to have a private, important business conversation, or perhaps you're laying out sensitive financial or legal papers, or just wanted to collaborate in a more private environment, it was very difficult to find those locations.
Starbucks doesn't really work for that.
You know, one thing that a lot of our clients say when they contrast us to other coffee houses of that nature is that they can have a quiet conversation.
Without an espresso machine?
Without an espresso machine. And, you know, basically we have a cafe, a very nice hip cafe with free Wi-Fi. But then we have a series of small, medium, and large conference rooms mm-hmm. that people are able to use. And each room is equipped with a dry marker board and a display that hooks up to your laptop so people can collaborate and develop ideas together. And we also have a 50-person classroom, which is our most popular room. Many corporations will use us for additional meeting space, for off-site meetings. And people, independent business people, run seminars there mm-hmm. for their clients. And you know, one thing that they like is we have a cafe, a full-service cafe, and a liquor license. So we'll bring in your breakfast, your lunch, your dinner, and then beer and wine for celebration afterwards.
So you can host kind of like a mixers and things like that there?
Absolutely.
Well?
In fact, this December we have several holiday parties taking place there along the theme of Rock Band. Mm-hmm. So we'll be people come in and have Rock Band competitions amongst
them. So you can set up the big screen TVs and do the whole...
Exactly. Our classroom has actually about a 10 by 12 foot high definition projection system on the wall. So people can do the warm-up acts in some of the other rooms, and then when they're really ready to compete, go
to the big stage.
Go to the big stage, that's right.
So this is that video game Rock Band?
Yes, that's what he's talking about.
I've never seen that played. I've heard my kids talk about it.
Yeah.
So yeah. It's a neat game, but that's a great feature to have. Was it your idea for the Rock Band or somebody approached you?
One of my partners whose sons are really into it. So my children are older, and someone had to explain to me what Rock Band was.
So how does a person go from being an executive at IBM into setting up and marketing a venture like this?
Well, it's a fun story, I think, because one of my colleagues at IBM, he lives near YMCA here in East Cobb, and I decided to tease him one day that how is it he's able to live with himself driving past the YMCA every morning and never going in. So the next week he called me and said, okay, smart guy, every morning, 6 a.m., you and I at the Y.
Somehow you got sucked into this.
So I got pulled into that. And after several months of doing that, he said, you know, Brian, I have this idea for a business. People have the need to meet. And he started describing the concept to me. And frankly, I've always wanted to work at IBM to a point where I could retire. And I officially retired a couple weeks ago. And then do something very entrepreneurial. So it all lined up very nicely. And as we pulled our team together, we all had different ideas about what this would be. But through the course of about a year and a half of Tuesday nights and Saturday mornings, we were able to craft the idea, build the business plan, find the funding, and actually open the doors.
Wow, how exciting. So so it took a year and a half from concept to doors open?
That's correct. Yeah.
How'd you put your team together?
It was a series of people knowing people. You know, one of our partners through we contacted one partner who we knew would be good, that we both knew. He had a very close friend who's director of franchising for an international firm. We thought, well, that would be a very good person to have on board. And then another one of our partners is a chef who really helped us design the restaurant side of the business and the cuisine that I think has put us on the map.
Mm-hmm. That's a good strategy, having a partner as a chef.
That's good. You like that.
I like that. Now, you mentioned corporate clients, you know, relatively large-sized companies taking advantage of your state-of-the-art training facilities and that kind of thing. What kinds of clients are you finding utilize your facilities, your conference rooms, and that kind of thing? What kind of businesses are they coming from?
That's a great question, Stone, because, you know, like any new business, you have your belief about how the business would work and who would use it, and then after you open the doors, in comes reality. And we thought that our biggest client base right up front would be the entrepreneur working out of the house, small business person. And while that is true, it took longer to reach these people, to make them aware of Roam and have them come in. Our biggest challenge is simply getting people in the door. Once people walk in the door, they have what I call a wow experience. Mm-hmm. They immediately understand the concept. They immediately warm up to the facility. It's a my personal design point is I wanted a very cool atmosphere where you could close million-dollar deals. And I think we achieved that with the cafe and with the meeting rooms. But to our surprise, one thing we underestimated was the demand corporate America had for our meeting space. And right away, major corporations in the Alpharetta area, we started booking our rooms for the week, for 2 or 3 days, for all-day meetings. And now that we've been open since April, we have succeeded in reaching more of the private business person, the entrepreneur, the salespersons. And every month, our memberships continue to grow at a very healthy rate because they basically have a professional environment to meet and meet their clients and close business. As one of our members put it, Rome is her Windward Avenue location.
Is it like an executive suite where they have offices permanently, or is it like a come and go kind of environment?
It's a come and go environment. It is. I think as businesses grow, they may be interested in the executive suites because they may need more permanent facilities. This is very much something you use as you need it. You pay as you need it.
So you mentioned a membership. How does that work?
We have 3 membership levels. Actually, we could say 4 because the first one is you're just a free roamer. You're able to come in and use the facility whenever you want, pay full retail. You can be a frequent roamer, which means you pay $49 a month, and you have unlimited access on a first-come, first-served basis to our small conference rooms. And that's proving to be very, very popular. People can come in, use them for a short period of time, and then move on, and people just use that facility as they need it. You can be a gold member level for $99 a month, and that gives you the ability to reserve a room in advance. So if you really know that you're going to be conducting events or conducting meetings and you want to make sure the space is available, you'd want to be a gold roamer, and you get a 35% discount on the room rate. Then you can be a platinum roamer for $140.
So that membership doesn't include the room?
That's correct. You just get a discount on the room rate, 35%, but you get the privilege of being able to reserve the room.
Ahead of time.
Ahead of time.
Right.
And then as a platinum roamer for $149 a month, you get a 50% discount. We also will set up what's called a Q-alias profile for you on the Internet. So if somebody goes to the Internet, types in your name, your profile comes up just as you want it to appear, as compared to not having any control over that at all. You get a 50% discount on the room rentals, and you can reserve a room up to a year out. So what we find is people who are very serious about running large events at Rome, we have several clients who put on day-long or 2-day-long seminars, they sign up for the platinum level membership.
And then how much is it to rent the room, the conference rooms?
That varies, again, based on the size of the room and how many hours you want to use it for and what discounts. Mm-hmm. But we're very competitive in that space.
So the only people that can go there are people who pay to go there.
No, you can walk in off the street and use the facilities, but you'd pay full retail.
And so, but I can go and get a cup of coffee there?
Absolutely.
And meet somebody is there a casual place, like a Starbucks-y kind of place?
Yes, we have our cafe. When you walk in, you immediately come into the cafe, and you can, in fact, we have several people that will meet the clients there for a beer or for wine after work, sit out on our balcony, enjoy the evening.
And that's just like a typical cafe where you just pay for your beverage and chat?
That's correct. And again, we have sandwiches, paninis, breakfast.
Oh, wow. So it's got the best of both worlds.
Mm-hmm. And you have Wi-Fi right there.
We have free Wi-Fi as well as light printer and copying support.
So if one wanted to, they could just come by, meet the other person, have a cup of coffee and a sandwich, take advantage of the Wi-Fi.
Absolutely.
Out in the lobby area. And it'd give them a chance to see the rest of the facility as well.
Absolutely.
And if you're not a member at all and you put on training programs, they could also book the training room?
Yes. Yes, we just,
just pay full retail.
That's correct.
I'm really interested in how you went about staffing your organization. And the reason I asked that question, when I walked in, I guess this has been 2 or 3 Fridays ago, everybody just looked like they were genuinely happy to be there. And they were just enjoying their work. Is there anything in particular that you did in recruiting and selecting your staff?
While I'd like to take great credit for that, I think we were very fortunate. I think one thing that we're blessed with is that the staff really likes the concept and wants to be a part of Rome today and Rome tomorrow. There's an energy at Rome. There's a culture. And one thing I didn't expect that I really enjoy about Rome is, in the past, when everybody went to an office, you had your relationship with your coworkers. Now, you develop a relationship with the other people that are there. We are each other's virtual coworkers, including my staff. So my staff has developed relationships with the different people that come in. So the water cooler conversations that used to take place in an office are now taking place at Rome. And, you know, people have come in and they've been able to find jobs through their networking at Rome. They have met, established new business relationships with other members. For example, we have two members who, one is in the leasing business, the other is in the telecommunications business. And when they met at Rome, they partnered up to address a certain market opportunity and have been doing business ever since that way. So it's there's just an environment and a culture there for success.
It encourages collaboration.
It does. And, you know, I like to say that Rome is a place where entrepreneurs come to succeed. And in February, we're going to be launching a weekly series of training sessions, all designed around entrepreneurialism. So it's either going to be every Wednesday or Thursday night. We have to iron that out yet. You'll be able to come in to a networking function starting at 7 o'clock. Then about 7:30, there'll be a one-hour training session on various entrepreneurial topics, and it'll end again with networking. So we want to bring content there. We want to enable people to meet each other and help their grow their businesses.
That is such an important dynamic. You know, I've been a remote employee for almost 20 years now, and there are a lot of advantages in that. If you're going to live and work in Marietta, Georgia, West Hartford, Connecticut is a great place to have a boss. But there are some disadvantages. And one thing you do from time to time feel isolated. And so to have an environment like that where you can build relationships and interact, I imagine that is a real draw, even if people don't consciously realize that benefit.
But you know that I retired from IBM, and when I joined IBM 30 years ago, IBM stood for I've been moved. I've been working out of my home since 1991, and IBM now stands for I'm by myself. So I could really relate to what people were saying, and it's just interesting to see how people come to the facility to meet others, and just to watch those relationships build is pretty exciting.
So how do you see this evolving?
Well, we have, I think, some pretty exciting plans. We're hoping to open up our next facility either in the Perimeter Mall area or in the Vinings area. We've noticed that the majority of our members are within 6-mile radius of Rome. Mm-hmm. So, you know, to move from, you know, we're at the intersection of Georgia 400 and Windward Parkway, kitty corner across from the Marriott. So to move down to the Perimeter Mall area forms a nice Venn diagram with those 6-mile radius circles, but also lands where there's a lot of corporations that may need additional space, that type of thing.
Right, and entrepreneurs.
Absolutely, and entrepreneurs.
So how does an organization like yours market? How do you get the word out?
Thank you for asking. Again, the...
Other than, you know, a top-rated radio show that has such absolutely a large listener base, but there's got to be other strategies you're employing.
Well, as I mentioned a few moments ago, how you think things are going to work out and how they actually work out are different. And we've, based on actual usage patterns, watching how the people actually come in and use Rome, we primarily rely on the emails, you know, buying lists and doing email campaigns and a few local publications. We spend a lot of time with About You magazine, which is proving to be very effective for us. But we also had to learn to craft two messages, one message and value proposition for the entrepreneur and another value proposition for the corporations. You know, they use the same space differently, and
sure,
they coexist very nicely. You know, they bring about a certain energy. The corporate clients that have come in, and when I've talked to the people who plan the meetings afterwards, they just say their people just like being at Rome. And I think when they're there, they're interacting either by accident or on purpose with the entrepreneurs that are there who are closing deals or meeting with their clients or simply working. So they enjoy that energy. But we have the two different messages that we do through email campaigns and through local publications.
And there's one other question that I just have to ask, and I think listeners would be interested in hearing how you went about this. I'm sure you made a very comfortable living with IBM, but how does one amass the kind of capital that you need to put into a venture like this?
Well, you have there's certainly many gut-wrenching moments when you take a look at how much money have I saved up, and when you inform your 25-year-old daughter that maybe a ladder from Home Depot is a good wedding option. She still does not think that's funny. But we were very fortunate. We were told right up front to expect the fundraising process to take twice as long as we thought and have a lot of people back out on their commitments. We spent, in fact, one of my partners was joking with us. There's several of us have the corporate background and spent a lot of time planning, a lot of time documenting. And he said, this is the most well-organized business, non-business I've ever been a part of because of all the documentation and planning we did. But I think as a result of that, when we did go to our investors and finding people that – it was amazing when I went through my Rolodex how many people I knew who either knew someone else or they themselves had money. And when we presented the business plan to them and the floor plan, only one person backed out of the funding option.
Wow.
Everyone else came through as promised in a relatively short period of time. And we're right now in the process of looking to expand and get additional funds. And I'd say we're having almost the same success record.
Well, Lee has plenty of money, so you'll want to talk to him after the show.
All right. All right. We write checks to all of our guests usually, right?
Right. Absolutely. So what's the best way for our listeners to get in touch with you or some of your staff to find out more about Rome?
Well, they can go to our website and take a virtual tour as well at www.romeatlanta.com. And Rome is spelled R-O-A-M. It's for professionals who roam. But romeatlanta.com. You can also call Rome at 678-495-2260.
Well, Brian, we're not going to let you go until we ask you to participate in a tradition here at the High Velocity Radio Show. What we'd like you to do, if you would, is share a mistake that you've made somewhere in your career, whether it's previously in the corporate environment or maybe in this entrepreneurial venture. But if you would, please share a mistake that you've made and really, more importantly, what you've learned from it.
In terms of a mistake, I don't know that I'd express this as much as a mistake, but perhaps one of the most meaningful learning experiences I had was from one of my mentors in IBM, where he was saying, you know, Brian, it's okay to be wrong, it's okay to make a mistake, so long as you can demonstrate that you weren't drunk and disorderly. And basically what he meant by that was, you know, show that your work is well thought out, well researched, what your assumptions were, how you combined those assumptions to come up with your conclusion, how you executed that plan, and if you made a mistake, where the mistakes were. You know, so that you can address it, you can fix it. And I found that that was perhaps the most valuable advice I ever had because it took some stress off the process of doing the research analysis and going forward. But also it provided me the format as I was sitting down with executives who I needed support from to make this happen. They would look at my assumptions. They would look at how I put them together and say either, yes, that looks good, or I think you need to fix this assumption, that assumption, or I can overcome that obstacle for you. In doing so, they bought into it. It became our plan. And even if it failed, we at least had the steps to go back and say, where did it fail? What do we need to fix? And the confidence level that they had in your work grew dramatically. And I think similarly, as we are trying to run this business now in a tough economy, you know, when we expect one side of business results and get a different set, we're always able to show these were our assumptions. This panned out. This did not pan out. Here's how we sense, you know, the sense and respond reaction we had to that change and how we're addressing it. So I think simply by clearly documenting your assumptions and how you link them together, how you research them, has served me very well. And you know, I owe a lot to that mentor because it takes a lot of the stress off of always having to be right and enabling people to collaborate.
Well, thanks so much for contributing to that tradition. And that is so key, it strikes me, is having the space to make those mistakes and then taking the accountability for returning the learning to the organization so that you can truly profit from them. Thank you so much for contributing that. We're going to break tradition here a little bit and ask you, Brian, to introduce our next guest, since you traveled here in tandem, and I think you have a little something to do with him being there. Would you introduce our next guest for us?
I'd be happy to. Bob Pafunde is a client of ours at Rome. I met him at Rome. And, you know, I was given the opportunity through this radio program to bring a guest, another client or somebody who has experienced Rome in his business. And I would say that, first of all, I've enjoyed getting to know Bob and learning more about his business and him personally. But he also has a neat success story about Rome. And so I thought it would be good to bring him in and introduce him to the rest of your radio audience.
Welcome to the show, Bob.
Good morning.
So let's just jump right into it. Tell us about the success story of yours.
Well, I want to make a couple comments before I do that.
Sure.
Brian has a wonderful place for entrepreneurs to meet and, as you mentioned earlier, to form strategic alliances with other professionals that can assist in your business. It's a very professional atmosphere. It's a place that I feel is very comfortable and clean. It's a place that you can have a confidential conversation with a client or a potential client and feel when they come there that they're coming to a place that represents what your business is all about, a professional atmosphere and a professional way to meet people. And I've definitely had some successes there already, both meeting people that I'm working with as strategic alliance partners, and also I closed a significant deal there a couple of weeks ago, and it took two visits. Both were at Rome, and my prospect felt very comfortable there. He asked several questions about the place, will probably become a member herself. But in the second visit, we signed a contract and moved forward with a business arrangement that's going to, you know, provide a lot of impetus to my growing company.
Well, congratulations on writing that business.
Yeah, thank you.
Can you talk a little bit about your company?
Yeah, the name of the company is Excelerate, and it's spelled with E X C E L. And the basis of the business is that all businesses go through a life cycle. And I like to consider myself a consultant with businesses through the various stages of their business cycle, whether it's a concept that you want to bring into a market, whether you're an established business trying to grow your profits and your team and building systems, or whether you're expanding into new locations or want to franchise, or the one that most business owners don't think of until maybe it's too late is how to exit your business gracefully with a profit or some kind of residual income. So emerging, established, expanding, and exiting businesses are the basis of what I help small businesses.
Do you specialize in any one group?
Actually, the business model that I use and the process I bring clients through is generic for almost any business. You know, you have to build a team. You have to have your fundamentals in place. If you want to expand and have the business work when you're not there, you have to have systems that work and people trained to operate those systems. And you have to have a model for generating new business, both bringing in prospects and then converting them to clients and growing the sales. So regardless of the industry or the type of business, I have found that that business model works for almost any business, and my clients will demonstrate that. They're in a variety of different professions. I have a medical device company I've worked with, and another client bills cancer treatment centers. I have a dance studio and a photographer and a number of other businesses that are so vastly different than one another. But basically, they're all going through some stage of growth and some stage of expanding their business. And we work on what's most important for them at that particular time.
Now, when you're working with a client, are you seeing similar mistakes? You said that there's similar processes. Are there similar mistakes that?
Well, that's an interesting question, Lee. Well, one of the things that I see happening quite often is that someone will come and tell me what they need, and generally it's I need more customers, I need more sales, so you know, help me with my marketing and advertising, which may be the case, and we'll probably address that at some point, but. Quite often, before we get started, we dig down and find out whether the infrastructure of the business is in place to handle expanded business. And quite often we have to address things in the infrastructure of the business to handle any new sales or handle new clients before we can go out and do a marketing campaign to bring in new prospects and new clients for the firm. And most folks don't think about that up front. It's all about getting new people in.
They think it's sales.
Yeah.
That's generally the case. You know, help me with my website, my advertising, my collateral material, which we do that kind of work. But often they need to put a team in place to handle some of the things so the business owner's not working 80 hours a week and juggling 10 balls in the air at the same time.
Now, do you have your own proprietary methodology, or are you just taking this from different?
I've had an interesting background in that I've been in several businesses. I've been in corporate for half of my business career, which is 41 years. And learned a lot about marketing when I was with Procter & Gamble and with Metropolitan in their insurance business. But I've owned several businesses and been exposed to a number of challenges that business owners go through. So basically the model that I use is evolved from my own experience. And I own some businesses that were very successful and others that if I had known about consulting and had somebody that I could go to for help, probably would have been more successful. So I've taken the learnings from corporate, I've taken the learnings from owning my own businesses, and I've had to reinvent myself many times. And I've had mentors along the way, and I wasn't afraid to ask them for help. And I find that if a business owner, most people, or a lot of people, think that if you ask for help, it's a sign of weakness. It's really just the opposite. Most of the successful businesses out there have people that help them in various aspects of running their business, and you can't be afraid to ask for help when you need it. So I have taken advantage of mentors that have helped me in my various career challenges, and I pass that same kind of learning on to my clients.
You mentioned that some of your clients, often their first instinct is we need more customers, we need to expand the business, and one of the holes that you often see is, or one of the things you look for is infrastructure. Is it really there? What about companies that are getting ready to exit? They want to retire or sell their business. Do you see some common mistakes or some common holes in their operation?
Well, there are a couple, and thanks for bringing it up, Stone. There are two things that people are going to look at when they're going to buy a business. One is, what are the financial results over the past 2 or 3 years? So that obviously has to be in place. So you need to start planning for an exit a couple of years before you're going to actually execute it. The other is, if the business is so tied to the business owner and the business owner hasn't put in place systems and a team to run the business without him, that unless the business owner goes with the business when he sells it, it doesn't have any value. So we work on putting the business into a position where it works without the business owner. And that is fundamentally putting systems in place and procedures and then hiring a team that can operate a business successfully when the owner's not there. If you think of one of the most successful enterprises in America, it's run by people that are under 30, and it's McDonald's. Everything is spelled out exactly what has to be done in a certain way, and that business runs no matter whether you're in London or California or New York. It's always the same. So you get the business in a place so that when an owner or a business purchaser is looking to buy that business, they're looking at something that's going to work without taking the business owner on as an employee.
How long does it take for a business person who has never documented anything to document all these processes?
It's really not that difficult. What I have done with a number of clients is ask them to have someone kind of ride sidekick while they're working in a typical week and document the things that they're doing. And there are key processes in a business, and if the business owner is doing all of them, what it takes is to write those things down. If a business owner doesn't write down what he's doing, he's condemned forever to have to do those things.
Right.
So we get someone to kind of watch over their shoulder and write down the things that are done in the key areas and take that page and put it in a binder. That becomes part of your policy manual. Mm-hmm. And after a short period of time, that three-ring binder starts to build up and becomes the basic procedure manual for the company and the business.
And then at that point, then you can show that to somebody else, and that's what they're buying now.
Sure.
Is this manual.
Well, when you hire employees, you can then take them to that manual and say, this is your responsibility. These are the tasks that need to be done to do this right. This is what it looks like when it's done right. And when you have a team in place and they have documentation on the procedures, then when someone's looking at your business, they said, yes, this is going to work. When I buy this business, it's going to continue to generate right. The profits that the financials are showing. So those are the keys to making that happen.
Do you ever find that your clients are surprised when you come back to them and say, hey, this is what I saw you do over the last week, 2 weeks? And they just were like, wow, I didn't even realize I was spending that kind of time doing that.
You're exactly right. And quite often that surfaces some problems in a business that we can work on. You know, we always go through a little formula where I ask someone what they want to make and what they have, how much they need to sell to make that kind of money. And divide that by the number of hours they work in the course of a year. And that number, it's usually around $300 to $1,000 number, is what they're worth per hour. Are they doing $500 an hour things during the course of the week, or are they running to the post office to buy stamps? So, you know, it brings things to light, and that's a formula that several of my clients keep on their desk to remind themselves I'm a $500 an hour person.
Do you have any advice, or have you observed some interesting characteristics when two small to medium-sized firms are entertaining forming some kind of alliance? Do they run into any particular challenges, or have you seen some kinds of alliances really work and others just the wheels come off?
Well, the alliance has to be spelled out very specifically as to, number one, who's going to run the business. And even though you might have equal ownership in a firm, there has to be a point person. And that becomes a hurdle that needs to be faced and met by the partners that are thinking of coming together. And you need to spell out responsibilities. If it's clear cut as to who's running the show and who that point person is going to be, it'll eliminate a lot of problems down the line in making key decisions that need to be made to move the business forward. So that's challenge number one. And challenge number two is to delineate what the responsibilities of all the people are and what areas they're going to focus their attention on and where their strengths are. It's matching strengths to tasks and passion of the business owners and making all that work that has to come into place to make a successful new business merger.
When you're working with a client, do you find that, you know, obviously each business owner comes with a certain set of strengths and weaknesses? Do you find it's best for the person to focus on their strengths or to kind of build up their weaknesses?
I actually tell clients to focus on their strengths, and we can work on weaknesses as a secondary challenge of something to work on over time, but focus on what you're good at. Quite often a business owner, when they get into business, they find out what they didn't know, and they're scrambling to do things that they're not familiar with or they're not good at. And they spend an inordinate amount of time trying to figure out how to manage the financials or do the marketing or develop a website, and that's time wasted. Focus on what you know. Outsource the things that you're not good with. Many of my clients will decide, once we put the plan together, what parts of it they want to do themselves and what parts they want to outsource. And that's where my strategic alliance partners come in. Because quite often I will refer my clients to someone that could design a website, someone that could do the IT work for a business, someone that can do marketing, financial, legal, and have those alliances in place so the business owner is working on what they're good at and they're not focusing and spending a lot of time on things that, you know, they're maybe not really strong in.
So how did you go about building these strategic alliances? Because that strikes me as such an important part of a business like yours, because you're not trying to be everything to all people. You want to have your core area of expertise, and you want to be that conduit to other people that can deliver the very best in their arena. But how do you go about crafting those alliances and feel like you've got people you can really lean on and trust, you know, to act in the best interest of your clients?
That's a great question. I do a lot of strategic networking, and a member of some closed and several open networking groups, and I try to find alliances that will be a good partner. But what I ask every one of my strategic alliances to do is to attend one of my seminars or workshops so they can understand the process that a client is going through when I'm consulting and working with that business, and they understand when I refer someone to them, you know, exactly what the culture is of my working relationship with that client, and they understand, you know, basically where that client is coming from, the things that they're trying to accomplish, and how I'm working with that client. Once that understanding is in place and people understand the process that I bring a client through, then I find people that are very similar to myself and treat people in a similar fashion, so that when I refer them, it's not a rude awakening and basically a client's being exposed to something they're not comfortable with. I have to be comfortable with the strategic alliance partner first, and then obviously then I'm in a position to refer my clients to them. So networking is key for me.
How else do you go to market, or is that your primary strategy for promoting your own business, the networking?
It's networking is a lot of it. It's a lot of referrals. People, when you do a good job for someone, they'll refer you. And I've been very fortunate to have clients that have given me opportunities to talk to other folks that they recognize would benefit from what I do, and that's how the business has grown. And I'm very pleased with that arrangement. It's kind of a family type of thing. I get to know my clients very closely when I'm working with them, because basically we start out looking at what they want to accomplish in their life, and then how could the business deliver it. So you get down to some pretty personal stuff when you're working with a client, and that, I think, is important. You have to find out what are the driving forces for that client that are going to make them do the work they have to do to get what they want. And if they don't have a big enough why for doing the work, then they probably won't do it.
It's about the big why.
That's right.
The big why.
Exactly.
So how do we get this conversation started, and where can our listeners get in touch with you to start talking through some of these things?
Well, you know, I'm like the barber son that doesn't have the haircut. I preach having everything in place, but my website is just being put into really good position right now and should be up and running by the end of the week. And the website address is acceleratenow.net, and that's spelled EXCELERATENOW. My email address is very similar. It's bob@acceleratenow.net, and my phone number is 404-245-0612.
Repeat that phone number one more time.
404-245-0612.
All right. Next time we have you on, we'll have something like 800 call Bob now.
There you go.
Don't do that today, though.
Thank you, Stone.
Thank you so much for joining us this morning, Bob. Before we let you go, we'd like you to participate in a little tradition we have here. We call it our Return to Learning segment, where we ask each guest to share a mistake that they've made somewhere in their career and what they've learned from it. Could we get you to do that for us?
Sure. And I think Lee kind of led me in this direction earlier. When I first opened my own business, my first business outside of corporate, I tried to do everything. You know, I figured I had done a lot of marketing with P&G, so I knew all about marketing. I knew enough about, hitting the bottom line. I had P&L responsibility with them. So I did my own financials. I designed all my collateral material. I tried to be everything in the business. And my wife would tell me from time to time, you're spending way too much time behind the computer. You need to get out and network and meet with folks. And I learned the hard way that even because you know how to do everything, it's not necessarily a good reason to do everything. And focus on what you're really good at, and find other folks that are professionals that can help you in the other areas. So I've learned from that experience, and I've passed that along to my clients as well.
That is really strong wisdom. Well, thanks again for joining us. What a terrific show. I think that we got a lot of good information out of this one, didn't we, Lee?
Yeah, and you survived.
And I did survive. Until next week, with a shout-out to the Lindleys and Zesigers and all the good folks in 100 West Virginia that showed us a good time this Thanksgiving. This is Stone Payton and Brian Kramer, Bob Pafundi, and our own Lee Cantor and the entire family at Radio X. Until next week, we'll see you in the fast lane.